All right, today we are in part two of Brand New Christmas, our Christmas series, Brand New Christmas. And what we began last week with the big idea we started off with last week is that many of us, when we think of Christmas, we think of tradition and repeating the same old things year after year after year, and we actually enjoy doing the same old things year after year after year. But if we're not careful, Christmas can just be the same old thing year after year after year. And what we said last week that's such a big deal that's going to drive this entire series, that Christmas was not the continuation of something old, that when God brought Jesus into the world, it was not the continuation of something old. It was not just, Judaism 2.0. It wasn't just the second version of something that was kind of old. It was God doing something that was absolutely brand new in human history. It was God doing something brand new in the world and God doing something brand new for the world. And what we said, even better than God doing something for the world, was that it was God doing something brand new for you. That it was God doing something brand new for me, that for every person who lived and breathed and walked the earth, Christmas was something brand new that God was doing. And so that's what we're talking. We're talking about the brand new that God began with the birth of Jesus, because the birth of Jesus, it signaled something that was the fulfillment of something old so that God could do something brand new. And last week, we talked about the idea of the old covenant and the new covenant that God established with the arrival and the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. That we talked about the old covenant, which often felt cold and distant. And with the new covenant, with the arrival of Jesus, this new covenant, this new way of connecting with God, it was not cold. It was now flesh and blood. It was not distant. It was now God come close, that we can actually be connected with our Heavenly Father because of what Jesus did, because of Jesus' arrival at Christmas, because of Jesus' death and resurrection, that was the brand new, that there is a brand new covenant that God established, a brand new way of connection for you and for me. And so today, as we continue to talk about the new that God unleashed, that God brought to the world at Christmas with the arrival of Jesus, today we're going to talk again about something new. And to do that, I want to talk about a phrase that is kind of common, I think, in religious circles among religious people. If you've been around church, or if you've been around churches at some point in your life, you have heard this statement. And especially if you've been around churches at Christmas time, you've heard this statement. And the statement is that God is for us. Would you just say that with me on the count of three? Ready? 1, 2, 3. God is for us. Yeah, how many of you guys have heard that at some point in your life? God is for us. Yeah. Now, here's the wonderful thing. That is an absolutely true statement. It's an absolutely true statement that God is for us. The downside of that statement is there's about 17 different ways you can use that statement to get really weird about following Jesus or about Christianity, about religion. You can say that and you can take it and you can twist it into a lot of different ways. You could say, well, God is for us, which means God's for me, which means God is for whatever I choose to want to do. You can be like, God is for me and I want to jump off of a cliff, therefore God will protect me as I fall off the cliff because God is for me. Anybody ever, we've all heard or seen people do ridiculous things like that. Today, I don't want to talk about that ridiculous way of handling this sentence. Today, I want to talk about a very specific weird thing that happens in religious circles when we start talking about God is for us. And specifically, I want to talk about that last word, that God is for us. Would you say us? Because us is a narrow word. Us, when we say God is for us, it means that God is for us. God is for me. God is for my group. And if he's for my group, then he's not for that group. That God is for us. And us is an exclusive word. And so as we talk about the old covenant, again, to talk about the new, we have to talk about the old. And to talk about the old, I want to talk about what us meant in the old covenant. I want to talk about who us was in the old way of thinking, in the old way of approaching God under the old covenant or the Old Testament in the first two-thirds of what we know as the Bible today, the old covenant. Who was us? And so here's who us was in the old covenant. The first thing is that us was the Jews. It was Jewish people. It was people who had been born in the nation of Israel. They considered themselves to have been chosen by God. I mean, this is people that they were the descendants of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, of Joseph, and all the way down the line, they went to Egypt. And then God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt miraculously. He established the covenant with the Jewish people and with no other nation on the earth. I mean, there's even stuff in the law that says, this will be the thing that sets you apart among all the nations of the earth, that I am your God and you are my people. But I don't know if you've ever known this, but when you are chosen, you tend to think that someone else is not chosen, right? Anytime you've been selected for something, you tend to think, Well, I was chosen and they weren't. I was chosen, they weren't. If you were ever in elementary school, middle school, high school, and you played dodgeball or you played some sport, basketball, football, and they picked up teams, anyone in here, let's see, a raise of hand. How many of you were ever picked first for something? Two hands. Some of you are like, I don't want to brag, but I was always picked first. Okay, I saw four hands up. Now, let me ask you this. How many of you, by raising your hands, how many of you were ever picked last? Way more hands up. Yeah. When I showed up in public school, I had been homeschooled for 8 years, and I was the unathletic, uncoordinated kid wearing sweatpants. When it came time to play football at lunch, it was like, pick everybody, and then it was like fighting over who had to take me. No one picked Chris. They had to take Chris, okay? And then I unleashed my incredible skills, and the next day I also got picked last. Anyway, but we know what it's like to feel chosen and to not feel chosen. And the nation of Israel, the Jewish people, they said, well, we've been chosen by God. And it created this superiority that we've been chosen by God because of something about us, that we are now better than other people, that we are superior, that there's something about us that God must have been a fan of because he chose us and he didn't choose anyone else. So the Jewish people, they were the chosen people of God. God was for them. Beyond that, to narrow it down a little bit beyond that, God was for the Jewish people, but God was especially for the Jewish people who had been circumcised. The circumcised. Now that's a word when you say in church, the room gets really, really quiet, right? It was for people who had been circumcised. So this is a thing that goes back way before Moses. This goes back to a man named Abraham. This goes back to a man named Abraham, who, by the way, when God began to speak to him and said, like, hey, I want you to be my people. I want you to be my guy. I'm going to set up a covenant with you. I'm going to establish a relationship with you. And you're going to be the father of many, many, many nations. You're going to be the father of my chosen people. And he said, but one of the things I want you to do is I want you to circumcise yourself. And Abraham went, I think I'm going to need you to clarify that. He's 70 years old. He's like, circumcised? That's kind of like a brand new word. And God gave him instructions on what he wanted him to do. And Abraham went, can't I like make an offering or something like that? Like, God, you want me to have surgery? You want me to have surgery in order to show that I am your person? And by the way, I wear a robe all the day. Who's going to even know? Like, how is that going to be the defining mark of me following you? It's just this odd thing. It was a very personal thing. But God had said, if you'll do this, and for generations to generation, Abraham said, like, well, look, okay, if we're going to do this from generation to generation, can we do this when it's not so painful? And God said, yep, you can do it on the eighth day of a baby's life. And Abraham was like, fine, that's before they can even feel this. And God was like, but Abraham, you're going to still do it now when you're 70. And he's like, okay. And then he performed the surgery and he went, okay. Anyway, so it's for the circumcised people. But here's the crazy thing about circumcision. So is the Jewish boys who had been circumcised were the chosen people of God. God was for the circumcised people. But here's the crazy thing about that. Whether or not you were circumcised was not your choice. It was your parents' choice when you were 8 days old. Your connection with God, God being for you, had nothing to do with any choice you had ever made. God was for you because of something that had been chosen for you, about you, and that you had no control over. And that somehow was what established your connection with God and determined whether or not God was for you. Let's talk about another one. God is for the Jewish people. He's for the circumcised. He's for the rule keepers. We talked about this last week. In a system that is so built on rules, that 613, 619, whatever number you want to place on it, if the system is all about rules, 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 who does that favor? The rule keepers. Every time. I mean, some of you, again, you've been in religious systems, you've been around churches where it was all rules, 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 rules. Do this, don't do this, don't wear that, don't hang with these people, don't drink that, don't eat that, don't go there, don't watch this movie, don't watch Disney movies, don't watch R-rated movies, don't watch PG-13 movies. Like, you can watch Pure Flicks. Like, what's Pure Flicks? Anyway, so it's rules, rules, rules. And that favors a certain type of person. It favors the person who's good at following the rules. Now, many of you who are parents, I have one kid, but I've talked to people who have two kids because eventually we're going to have two. I hope we're going to have two kids. And I hope we don't have more, but we're going to hopefully have two kids. And I'm like, well, what's it like to have two kids? And everybody who has two kids, they say, here's what happens when you have two kids. You have one of them who's a rule follower and one who's not. And they say, and you know who we kind of like a little bit better? And then they don't finish the sentence because every parent has, like, some of them like the rule keeper and some of them like we like the kid who challenges us. And I'm like, I think I'll like the rule keeper. Anyway, so like there's certain systems that favor rule keepers and certain systems that don't favor the rule keepers. And this system was one that always favored the people who could keep the rules, the personality that naturally went, I want to stay good by the rules. I want to follow the rules. I want to keep the rules. It favored this system. So God was for the rule keepers. And if you weren't a rule keeper, tough nubbins, you were on the outside looking in. You could not connect with God. God was not for you. God would show no favor to you. You were a rule breaker. And rule breakers are not people that God is for. This is the old way of thinking. Another people that got a group of people that God was for, and this is just kind of a dirty little thing that's carried its way, unfortunately, into too far into Christianity even, that God is for the wealthy. God is for the wealthy. God is for the people who have money. God's for people who go cha-ching and they have some stuff that they can actually rub together and go cha-ching with. That God is obviously for the wealthy. And the reason you knew God was for the wealthy is just look at everything they have. God has obviously blessed the wealthy people, right? Look at their bank account. Look at all the animals they have in their flock. Look at everything that they have. Look at their money pouch. It like drags on the ground because it they can't possibly hold it. Like, man, those people, they've got some money. They've got some riches. They've got some wealth. God is obviously for them. And there was a few verses that people put together and said, like, oh yeah, this is, you know, it's called the prosperity gospel, that God prospers certain people. God prospers people for their belief. God prospers people because of their you know, trust in him. And that's, I think that can be true sometimes, but I don't think it's always true. I know some people have incredible trust in God who have almost no money, and I think it's, and I don't think they've done anything wrong. But you had this group of people that was, you know, wealthy in it, and people would go, wow, look at them. God has obviously favored them. But here's the dirty little secret of kind of religion. You know who else? So it was like, okay, well, obviously God has favored these people. But you know who else tended to favor the rich and the wealthy people? The priests and the religious leaders. Because the system was set up that the priests and the religious leaders, their livelihood depended on the offerings and the sacrifices of the people. And so if you've got a person bringing in two little bits of coins or a person bringing in five lambs as an offering, who do you favor? You favor the five lamb person. You favor the person that helps you live better. You favor the person, so you cozy up, you snuggle, probably not snuggle up, like you don't, you're like, you know, like, you know, hopefully not like, hey, you know, like you don't have that, but you've got this system where they're like, well, we want to be buddy, buddy, buddy with these rich people, these wealthy people, because, you know, like when a poor person brings in their offering, you know, that's adorable. But oh, when a wealthy person brings it in, we're having prime rib for dinner. Like we're having something good. And unfortunately, like I said, this is something that just carried its way into religion. If you think about the Middle Ages, what was indulgences all about? Indulgence was all about if you had enough money, you could live however you wanted, give a priest an offering, and they would absolve all of your sins. It's a toxic thing. It's a toxic system when wealth determines your connection with God. It's a toxic thing every time. When due to how much money you have, how much wealth you have, how much land, how much cattle you have, if that determines your connection with God, it's a terrible, toxic thing. But this was part of the Old Testament or the Old Covenant way of thinking of who gets connected with God and who God is for. Another one, I'm going to actually put these two up on the screen at the same time. There's clean and then there's men. There's the clean, and then there's men. Now, some of you, we have a lot of ladies in the room today. Some of you are single, and you're thinking, this is the reason that I haven't gotten married yet. I can't find, because there is no such thing as a clean man. There is, those two boxes never get checked at the same time. I've met a man. I've met someone who is clean. They weren't the same person, okay? This doesn't exist. Some of you who are married in the room, you're like, yeah, well, I'm married. I didn't find one. I just settled for outside of God's blessing, okay? So, here's the thing, the clean and the men, this is kind of two separate things. I just put them up there at the same time for the sake of a joke. The clean meant that there was clean and there was unclean. Clean, unclean. And this means basically ceremonially clean. Are they capable of going before God to offer sacrifices? They were clean or unclean. There were certain professions, certain career fields, that if you worked in those career fields, you were automatically, basically always in a constant state of unclean. And here's the kind of dirty little side of that. The poorer a person was, the more likely they were to work in one of those career fields that kept a person unclean. And so you're thinking like, well, I'm unclean because I was around animals. I'm unclean because I was working around leather. I'm unclean because I was taking care of sick people. You know, I feel like I was doing the best for my family, but now I'm unclean and I want to approach God, but I can't approach God because I am always unclean. Certain diseases made you automatically unclean. Leprosy automatically made you unclean. But there was basically certain skin conditions. Like if you ever had really bad acne, like if you were ever a teenager and you had really bad acne, if you had, you know, stuff on your face or on your neck, you know, you would show up and go, they'd just go, sorry, go get yourself some Clearasil, get yourself some Neutrogena, get yourself some stuff, clean up your face, and then you can come back. Like, wait, wait, wait. My teenage acne keeps me from connecting with God? Yup. Okay, there's clean and there's unclean. There's clean and there's unclean. And the clean people, those who are able to keep themselves ceremonially pure, those people can connect with God. And really, if you're unclean, you can't connect with God. And then let's talk about the men. Because men could connect with God in ways that women could not. I mean, I want to be careful as I say this because I know as a culture, like we still have a long way to go when it comes to like true like equality. But you want to know when it was really bad for women's equality? In the Old Testament. In ancient times, it was bad to be a woman. And here's the thing. In the Old Testament, the old covenant, the covenant that God established with the nation of Israel raised the level of women to a level of respect and protection that was seen nowhere else in the ancient world. And it was still a bad time to be a woman. Let me just ask you this. The creation story, the story of how sin entered the world. Who was the first person that sinned? Eve. And she was a woman. So if you're a good Jewish boy or a good Jewish girl, and you hear the creation story, you hear how sin entered the world, whose fault is everything in the world? A woman. And therefore, you know what? This is why men have to be in charge of the household, because of these women. They were the first to say, we were just tricked in, as men, we were just tricked into it. But these women, they just chose to sin in defiance to God. And us men, we would never choose that. So we need to be the head of the household. We need to be in charge of the women. One of the things that was true about women in that time, women could not make sacrifices to God. So if a woman sinned and they wanted to make a sacrifice to atone for their sin, they had to go through their father or they had to go through their husband in order to be made right with God. They could not connect to God one-on-one. They had to go through their father, to go through a priest, to go to God. Just imagine the shame in that. Like you're thinking like, oh, well, I sinned. I don't really want to talk to anybody about it. I want to take my offering to God. I want to take my sacrifice to God to be made right with God. But first I have to confess to my dad, confess to my husband, and let them know what happened so that they can go make the sin for me or make the offering for me, make the sacrifice for me. And then they can come back and let me know whether my offering was accepted or not. I mean, it's just a crazy thing. The priesthood was exclusively a boys' club. I mean, there was when it came to equality, men could connect with God in ways that women could not. When you talk about the cleanliness rules, the hygiene rules, the rules for men were rather strict. But when it came to the rules for women, I mean, it made people feel incredibly excluded. There's literally a rule that said when a woman is on her period, she has to leave the town or leave the camp to go to a camp or a town outside the town or outside the camp. I said this in last service because I thought it was funny. I think this might have been God's Old Testament way of keeping marriages together. To just like, hey, you go, just come back. It wasn't really funny then. I just decided to try it again. It wasn't funny again. Anyway, just imagine this, ladies. Just imagine this. Imagine this. I mean, it's barbaric thinking about this 3,500 years later. But hey, every time that you're on your time of the month, you're heading up to Radium Springs. Sorry, Radium Springs is the city where you get to go. You're like, there's not even a Walmart there. Sorry. There's no Target. Sorry, gotta go. There's no Starbucks. Gotta go. I mean, like this is what the old way of thinking, this is the old covenant way of approaching God. And so the people who could approach God, it was a very narrow list. If you checked all of these boxes, you could approach God with confidence. You could approach God and feel like God would hear you. If you checked the boy of being a good Jewish boy who had gotten circumcised, who was a rule keeper, who was wealthy, who kept yourself clean, and who grew into a man, you could approach God. But if you didn't check all of those boxes, you're going, I don't quite have the same level of confidence. I'm a Jewish guy who was circumcised, but I'm not particularly a rule keeper, and I haven't made enough money to be considered wealthy and clean. I don't know. Still hoping my mom does my laundry. You know, like this was who got to approach God. It was a very narrow list of who got to approach God. And the problem with that way of thinking is this, that a short list of people included always means there's a long list of people who are excluded. A short list of people who are included, a short list of people who are in, a narrow list of you get in but no one else does, a short list of people who are included always means there's a long list of people who are excluded, who feel outside, who feel like they can't connect with God, who feel like they can't approach God, who feel like God won't hear their prayers if they even pray them, who feel like they can never really be close to God or know God personally. This is the old way of doing things. And here's the crazy thing about that. Everyone who lived in ancient Israel was pretty okay with that. Everyone who lived in ancient Israel, except for God, was pretty okay with that. Everyone who lived in ancient Israel and lived under this old way of doing things in this old covenant was okay. They thought, well, this is just the way it is. This is how we live. Especially the men were pretty okay with it. Women were like, well, this is what we've always lived in. And at least we're better than, you know, our situation is better than these other situations. But everyone was pretty okay with having this short list of people who got included and a long list of people who got excluded. Everyone was okay with it except for God. And so about 650 years before Jesus, God began to speak through a prophet or through a group of prophets that identified themselves as Isaiah. And in Isaiah, it's one of these beautiful Old Testament books of prophecy about a day that was to come, that there would be a day, that there would be a time, that there would be a moment in the future where the old things would pass away and there would be a brand new way of doing things. And so let me read to you a few passages from the book of Isaiah, from the prophecies of Isaiah, of God speaking through this prophet or these prophets about the day that was to come. In Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, God said this, "In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all nations." Did you say all nations?
All nations.
All nations. Like just, no. You're like, going, wait. Under our way of doing things, it's our nation. And God says, no. There's coming a day. It's going to be all nations. It's like our nation and like the next one over. No. All nations. All nations will stream to it. This was God's original Netflix plan. This is God's streaming option. This is all nations are going to file. Like it's not going to be like standing. It's going to be like we're moving and there's more and there's more and there's more and there's more coming. All nations are going to come to the mountain of the Lord. All nations are welcomed at the mountain of the Lord. Isaiah chapter 25 says this, on this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples. Would you say all peoples? Again, you're going, no, it's the men peoples. No, God says all peoples. No, it's the circumcised peoples. No, it's the all peoples. No, it's the wealthy peoples. No, it's all peoples. A feast of rich food for all peoples. A banquet of aged wine, or in the assemblies of God, of aged grape juice. The best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he says, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples. Again, all peoples. The sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. And he says, the sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. The white faces? No, all faces. The American faces? No, all faces. Jewish faces? All faces. Brown faces? All faces. I will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. And that's God's way of saying, drop the mic. I have spoken. This is what's going to happen. This is what I'm going to do. I will make it available for all nations. I will make it available for all people. I will wipe the tears from all faces. Salvation's coming to everyone. We're going global. Isaiah 49, verse 6, he said, I will also make you a light for the Gentiles. Would you say the Gentiles? Now, here's the thing. If some of you are not familiar with the word the Gentiles, Gentiles is everyone who was not Jewish, which was a larger chunk of people than the Jewish people. He says, I'm going to use you as a nation to be a light for the Gentiles, that there's going to be something about you that I'm going to use in you to shine a light so bright that all the Gentiles are going to see it. All the Gentiles are going to know that God did something. I will also make you a light for the Gentiles that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. Wait, like the border of our country? No. The ends of the earth. The end of the Middle East? No. The end of the earth. People you don't even know, people you haven't even thought of, that's where this is going to go. That's where my salvation is going to go. It's not just a Jewish thing anymore. There's coming a day when it's going everywhere and to everyone. And then Isaiah 52, God said this, the Lord will lay bare his holy arm in the sight of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth will see the salvation of our God. What was God's promise? That salvation was no longer a Jewish thing, that salvation and right standing with God was no longer a circumcised thing, that there would be a day when it wasn't a check the boxes thing, that there would be a day where it was just a thing, that it was going to be made available to everyone, everywhere, for all time. Yeah. That everywhere and all the ends of the earth will see the salvation of our God. And now here's the thing. If you're on the outside, and if you don't check all six of those boxes that I mentioned earlier, these are beautiful promises. That there would someday be a day where salvation would be made available to all. If you're on the outside, if you've ever felt excluded, these were amazing promises that God made 650 years before the birth of Jesus. The problem was that everyone on the inside basically ignored these promises. They didn't really act on them, didn't really do anything with them. Because for the Jewish people, let's be honest, being a light for the Gentiles, they didn't really care about being a light for the Gentiles. They didn't particularly like the Gentiles. The Gentiles that they had known had come in and attacked them and had come in and taken over their nation and come in and taxed them and come in and taken some of their children away. The Gentiles that they had encountered, they didn't want to be a light. They wanted to snuff out. When he talked about, they didn't particularly care about being a light for all nations. They wanted God to help their nation. They didn't particularly care about God wiping away the tears from all faces. They wanted God to wipe away the tears from their faces. And so for 650 years, there was a promise and nothing happened. And promise and silence and promise and no action and promise and nothing changed. Until the night that Jesus was born. And on the night that Jesus was born, again, God began something that was so brand new. God began what I would call the inclusion of God. The inclusion of all peoples. God took this promise that had been made 650 years ago and he began to fulfill it, that all nations and all peoples and all faces would be impacted and be touched by God and everyone would have access. So let me tell you, let me put up on screen a list of some people that got to encounter Jesus, that Jesus touched and that Jesus included in his life and in his ministry that when we think about it, we go, well, that's just part of the story. But for Jesus to encounter these people and work with these people and live with these people, this was brand new. The shepherds. I don't know what picture you have when you think of the shepherds, but if you ever had a nativity scene, you know, on a table or on a piano or on the ground under the tree, whatever you had, chances are your shepherds didn't look a whole lot like the shepherds that actually existed in those days. Chances are your shepherds had long beards and big staffs, and they looked like they were about 55-year-old men who were like, yes, we watch sheep. That's the picture most of us have. You want to know what kind of person was a shepherd? There was two types of people who became shepherds. One of them was like King David from the Old Testament, and they're young, you know, young teenage boys. And the way that young teenage boys became shepherds was only if their family had an excess of boys in the family. If there was an excess of boys and male testosterone in the family, they would send a few of them out, the youngest ones of them out, to go, hey, you take care of the sheep. You go do something useful with your life. We've got enough boys around here to do other stuff. You go take care of the sheep. And so a lot of times it was young teenage boys, but most of the time it was young teenage girls. It was 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old girls. And so the first people, just think of this. The old way says, men get included. Men have access. Men get to know God. Men get to communicate with God. And the very first people that the angel appears to and says, hey, the Savior, the Messiah has come. See him in the manger where he lays. Who's the first people that get to hear about that? A bunch of teenage girls. Isn't that beautiful? Those who were excluded before are now included. The wise men. The wise men, we're told, the wise men came from afar. It means they had to travel from a far away land. It means they came a distance. It means that also, by the way, they didn't show up that night. It means they came for a while. The star showed up when Jesus was born. They're like, what could this mean? They travel, they find out, they're like, oh, that's the sign of the Messiah. Let's go follow the star. They follow the star. It took a while for them to get Jesus. Jesus was probably like 2 or 3 months old by the time they got there. Anyway, here's what this means. They were foreigners. The wise men were foreigners. Chances are the wise men were Gentiles. Chances are the wise men were not circumcised. They didn't check a lot of the boxes. They may have been wealthy. They had some gifts that they gave that signified their wealth. But we don't know what else was true to them. But we do know that they were foreigners. We know chances are they were not circumcised. They didn't check a lot of the boxes. And those who were excluded by the old way of thinking are now included in the life and the ministry of Jesus. The shepherds, the wise men, the Romans, as Jesus grew up, as Jesus became a man. I mean, he lived in the time when Israel was dominated and conquered by Romans, by the Roman people, who were also Gentiles. Again, these are people that were not well liked. If a good Jewish boy, when they encountered a Roman soldier or a Roman person, they dipped their head down to the side so that they didn't make eye contact because you didn't want to let the Romans know that they were welcome in your presence. When the Romans encountered Jesus, Jesus shook their hands. Jesus looked them in the eyes. When they said, hey, our servants need healing, Jesus said, I will come and I will heal your servants because there is no one who is untouchable for me. I'm coming for you. I am willing to encounter you. You may be a Gentile. You may be an invader. You may not really be welcome among the people, but you're welcome among me. The shepherds, the wise men, the Romans, the lepers. Again, I mentioned this before. The lepers, if you had leprosy, you were in a constant state of unclean. You had to yell before you could show up in public. You had to yell, unclean, to give people time to scatter away from you. Because the fear was that your uncleanness could jump onto their cleanness and make them unclean. They had to stay 50 steps away from the nearest person, which is about the distance from me to Vanessa, maybe even a little further in the back row. That's how far, you had to stay that far away from someone who was clean. That's as close as you could come to anyone who was clean in society. And these lepers, they saw Jesus, and they saw the types of people that he worked with, and the types of people that he did ministry with, and the types of people he was willing to touch, and they said, I can go to 49, and to 48, and to 47, and to 30 steps, and to 20 steps, and 10 steps. And now I'm looking him in the eyes, and he doesn't seem afraid. And when they got close enough to touch, Jesus didn't go, ee. Jesus laid his hands on them, and with a word said, be healed, be clean. Here's your life back. Those who were excluded, those who were on the outside, were welcomed by Jesus and brought inside. And let me talk about another group, the blind. We did a series on this a few months ago, but to be blind in the time of Jesus was basically to know that you had been punished by God. Blindness was perceived to be a punishment from God, meaning you did something so bad, God took away your sight. You're born blind. Someone else did something so bad that God took away your sight. Blindness was a punishment from God. Blindness meant that God had given up on you. And blind people encounter Jesus and they find hope again. All of a sudden, these people who feel like, well, God gave up on us, God gave up on us, God gave up on us. They don't see, they hear about Jesus, they encounter Jesus. They think, maybe, just maybe, our sight could be restored if he'll just lay his hands on us. And blind people, people who had been excluded, were included by Jesus. The poor. Again, one of the things that you see with Jesus is there's always these crowds around Jesus. And we have to ask the question, why did these crowds always follow Jesus? And it was not because of what he said. Jesus said things like, if you want to follow me, you have to eat my body and drink my blood. You're like, pass. People showed up to follow Jesus. Massive amounts of people showed up to follow Jesus because everywhere Jesus went, food showed up. It was like, hey, now it's fish taco day for 5,000. We're feeding fish tacos to 5,000 and 10,000 and 8,000. I mean, like wherever Jesus went, food happened miraculously. It was like, hey, it's free Chick-fil-A day wherever Jesus is. That's why we call it Christian chicken. Because like, no, just like, but like wherever Jesus went, there was people received their needs being met. People had their needs. People had their need for food, their need for shelter. I mean, like people had their needs met by Jesus because the people who were excluded by the old were welcomed by Jesus in the new. Women, again, the first people to hear about the arrival of Jesus, the birth of Jesus, were these shepherd girls. Like, no, the way I heard it in church was it's the shepherd boys. Well, you heard wrong. It's the shepherd girls. The first people to hear about the arrival of the Messiah was teenage girls. The first people to know about the resurrection of Jesus, you know who that was? Women. Women who had followed and participated in Jesus' ministry. Yeah, the priest thing, that's a boys' club. Jesus' ministry, that's an everyone included thing. Everywhere Jesus went, he was like, hey, men, women, children, everybody gets in. Children, come on up to me. No, you have to be a person of dignity. I'm a person of dignity. I'm giving them my dignity. There was a story right before Jesus' death and resurrection, before his arrest, of a woman who broke an incredibly expensive jar of perfume and anointed Jesus' feet, which still is weird to me. And he, like, used her hair to wipe it off. I'm like, double weird. Anyway, like, but like, There's some of you going, like, you need to, you know, Jesus, you need to reprimand this woman. She's done something irresponsible. And Jesus says, no, 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 she's done something that's a great act of faith. And Jesus says, for wherever the gospel goes and wherever the account of my life goes, her story is going to go. People are going to know about her great act of faith. And they're going, but she's a woman. And he's going, yep, put it in the book. And 2,000 years later, we know the story. Because Jesus included those who had been excluded by the old way of doing things. And finally, this is, I put thieves in there because guess who Jesus was crucified between? Two thieves. You know what's true about two thieves? Is they're rule breakers. They couldn't keep the rules. And let me just ask you this. How bad do you have to have a problem with stealing to get killed for it? I mean, let's just be like, this is not, oh, we pickpocketed once. This is, we started as pickpockets when we were 10, and then we graduated to this, and then we ripped off a grocery, or a cigarette stand, and then we did this, and then we did this, and then we stole from this person, and we stole from this person, and then that same rush didn't happen from stealing from just some ordinary person. We targeted a really rich person. We stole a lot, and we got caught, and now we're being crucified. I mean, like, this is people who could not follow the rules to save their lives. And while they're being crucified, Jesus is there between them. And you would think if Jesus is a good, godly person, he's just going, ugh, ugh. And who does Jesus have a conversation with? The rule breaker to the right and the rule breaker to his left. And when one of them says, Jesus, will you remember me when you enter your kingdom? And Jesus says, I tell you the truth, today you're going to be with me in paradise. You're thinking, this isn't even like a commit your life to God and from this point forward, I'll do everything for you. From this point forward is about 5 minutes. There is no from this point forward. There is no chance of you know, making things right, or there's no chance of restitution. There is only in this moment, I put my trust in Jesus for the forgiveness of my sins. And in that moment, this rule breaker got it. Because everyone who was excluded by the old was welcome in the new that Jesus brought. That is the good news. So, later in the New Testament, after Jesus' death and resurrection, a man named Paul, who became a follower of Jesus, a man who was once a Pharisee, a man who once was dedicated to check the box, check the box, check the box, follow the rules, keep yourself clean, be a man, make sure everybody, he starts to follow Jesus and his life radically turns around. And he began to write, he began to preach, and he began to plant churches and start churches and tell people everywhere about Jesus. And he began to write letters to these churches and to these Christians. And so in the city of Corinth was a church that Paul had begun. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we have one of the letters that Paul wrote to this church. And in verse 16, it says this, so we have stopped evaluating others. In other words, like, we used to evaluate others. We used to judge people. We used to judge people from a human point of view. In other words, from a law point of view, from an old covenant point of view, from a check this box, check this box, check this box, from a list, 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 keep the rules, keep the rules, keep the rules point of view. At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. And then I love this thing, this verse. How differently we know him now. In other words, before the death and the resurrection, we only saw him by, he hung out with these people that we didn't like, and these people that we didn't like, and he did this that we didn't like, and we did this that we didn't like. How differently we know him now. We can't judge him by human standards. Can't judge him by our law. Can't judge him by our preferences. How differently we know him now. After the death and resurrection, we're just going to assume that we were wrong and he's right. How differently we know him now. It says this. This means that anyone. Who?
Anyone.
Anyone. Who?
Anyone.
I'm asking y'all. This means that who?
Anyone.
Anyone. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone and a new life has begun. He says this, and all of this is a gift from God who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. So in other words, once we are following Jesus, we've been given a task of helping other people be reconciled or reconnected with God. For God was in Christ reconciling the world. No, Israel? No, no, no. The Middle East? No. America? No. The world to himself. No longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. So we are Christ's ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us, through Chris, through Sarah, through through Vanessa, through Simon, through Justin, through those of us who are following Jesus. God is doing something through us to help others connect to him. He's using us as his messengers. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. For God made Christ, who never sinned, who lived perfectly, who never sinned, who never broke the law, who fulfilled every bit of the old way of doing it, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sin, for my sin, for your sin, so that we could be made right with God through Christ. In other words, hey, the old way of thinking is that God is for us. Paul says, no, it's not God is for us. God is for we. God is for us. God is for we. It's inclusive. That God, through Jesus, offered inclusiveness. God had offered an invitation to everyone, everywhere that had ever been excluded from in the old way of doing things. It was brand spanking new. And it was for everyone. And it was for all time, everywhere. The good news, the brand new at Christmas, is that everyone excluded by the old is welcomed in the new. And the great news is that everyone who is included in the old is also included in the new, because the new is for everyone. It is inclusive. It's for the rule keepers. It's for the rule breakers. It's for the Jews. It's for the non-Jews. It's for the circumcised, and thank God it's for the non-circumcised. It's for everyone. It's for the men. It's for the women. It's for the clean. It's for the unclean. It's for the wealthy. It's for the poor. It's for the middle class. It's for everyone, everywhere. He is the Savior for everyone. For all time, everywhere. And so here's the thing. For some of you, you've been a Christian long enough that you've become part of us in your own mind. That you've got a small little circle. That there's us. God is for us. And when you think about people who are not us, you kind of think like, you know what? God really likes us, but there's those people he's not too pleased with. There's those people he's judging. There's people who have gone a little too far, have done a few too many things, have walked away for too long, and you know God is for us, but He's not for them. And I just want to say, as someone who's been around church a long time, as someone who has a tendency as a rule keeper myself to judge, and has to work hard to stay away from that, I just want to say today, if that's you, my prayer for you is that God would begin to chip away at the ice that's a little bit around your heart. Is that okay to say? That God would begin to chip away at that ice that would say, you know what? You've got a little bit cold to some people who are lost. That God cares about lost people. And right now you don't. Because there's some ice around your heart. And I'm going to pray that today, beginning today, God would begin to chip away or thaw away at that ice that's formed around your heart, because God cares about lost people. And if God cares about lost people who are far from him, who currently feel excluded from him, who currently feel like they can't connect with him, then we have to care about them too. If we're to follow Jesus, it means we have to care for those who Jesus cares about. And we have to be willing to do things that help people connect with their Heavenly Father, who have been excluded, who have felt like they couldn't approach God because of something they've done or something they've been or something that has happened in their life. Matter of fact, that's why we exist as a church. That's why we exist as a church, to help people who have been disconnected, help them connect with their Heavenly Father. That's why we exist. Now, so that's if you're one of the insiders who thinks we're a us, we're not a us, we're a we. And for those of you who may be here today and you think, you know what, I'm one of those people, I feel like I've been excluded. Maybe something happened in your life, maybe you were a part of a church as you were growing up, and somewhere along the way there was something that happened in your family or something that happened to you. Maybe you were that young teenage girl who got pregnant, and all of a sudden it was like, whoa, no one knows how to handle this girl. Or maybe your parents got divorced, and it was like, oh, we don't know how to handle their divorce. Or maybe there's a series of choices you made, and all of a sudden you felt excluded because of what you had done or who you were around, or you were hanging around a person that no one else seemed to be fond of, and because you were hanging around them, you got excluded, you got pushed out. I don't know what it was, but somehow you feel like you've been excluded. I just want to let you know today, there's two words that begin with the letter I that are true about you. You are invited and you are included. You are included and you are invited. You are included and you are invited. You are included in everyone. You are included you are invited as everyone. If you are walking, talking, breathing air, drinking water, if you have breath in your lungs, you are included in the everyone that Jesus died for. You are invited as one of the people that Jesus came for. You are included. You are invited. You are welcome. Do not have to be on the outside. You are invited to be connected with your Heavenly Father through Jesus. And so I tried to come up with a list, and every time I try to come up with a list of things, I end up sounding like a racist or something like that as I talk about like different types of people who are included, because I either leave somebody out or I say things too specifically. So I tried to come up with a list, and I didn't do a good job of it, so I'm just going to make up a list off the top of my head of people who are welcomed, people who are invited, people who are included in the new. White people are included in the new. Brown people are included in the new. Dark brown people are included in the new. Everyone's included in the new. If you eat, if at Thanksgiving, if you eat dressing, you're included in the new. If you eat stuffing, you are included in the new. Now, I have problems with you, but you're included in the new. If you eat macaroni and cheese and grits at Thanksgiving, you are included in the new. If you eat enchiladas, I don't know why, but you are included in the new. If at Christmas you eat ham, you're included in the new. If you at Christmas you eat turkey, you're included in the new. If at Christmas you eat prime rib, I'm coming to your house and you're included in the new. If you wear Nikes, you're included in the new. If you wear Reeboks, you're included in the new. If you wear Adidas, you're included in the new. If you wear boots, you're included in the new. If you wear knee-high boots, you're included in the new. If you wear like flip-flop sandals and you never wear shoes, even though you should because you have hairy feet, you are included in the new. If you have blonde hair, you are included. If you have brown hair, if you have black hair, if you have purple hair, blue hair, orange hair, green hair is just too weird, but if you have no hair, white hair, gray hair, you are included in the new. If you are old, you are included in the new. If you are young, you are included in the new. If your name is Chris, you are included in the new. And if your name is not Chris, you are included in the new. That's who's included. That's who's invited. If you're breathing and if you're walking this earth, you are included and you are invited. There is nothing you have done, nothing you have been, and nowhere you could go where you are not included and invited into in a relationship with your Heavenly Father. You're invited and you're included. God made a way for you and God made a way for me. And so here's the way. Here's how we wrap up today. Jesus became the one way for everyone. He became the one way for everyone. It's the most exclusive way, but it's the most inclusive for everyone. Jesus is the one way for everyone. That Jesus died for your sins. He raised from the dead to offer us new life and to show us how to see new life. And then he invited all of us to trust in him. He became the one way for everyone, including you and including me.